Hello, everyone, and welcome to RHAP's coverage of Survivor South Africa, Island of Secrets. I'm your host, Shannon Gates, here for a deep dive, a great deep dive with someone that I absolutely loved watching, was a huge fan of, and I know that so many of our listeners were a fan of as well. So please welcome the great Sipe Mashilagane.
There we go. Hello, Shannon. And thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for coming on. I mean, as I've said, huge fan. I was so upset when you got voted out. I remember that night I went out for dinner with my fiance and he hadn't seen the episode left yet. And he was like, so confused as to why I was so distracted, but I couldn't tell him why I was so sad. And that's how emotionally attached I was to your journey on the show.
Look, thank you so much. A lot of people were very disappointed, but I've got this to say, it was my time to go. And I have no regrets, and I have no animosity towards anybody. It was a full circle indeed. And you get to understand that once you complete it within the Ponderosa element and going through, you know, afterwards sitting back and just reflecting. And I realized that it was my time to go.
Well, we are going to get into every aspect of that, maybe have a little bit of a therapy session for me so that I can come to terms with it, which would be really good. The show ended a couple of weeks ago now. How have you been since the reunion and everything finished up?
Look, the show ended, like you say, a couple of weeks ago. It was phenomenal to watch it back and to be part of it. And I must honestly say that big ups to production as well. I love how they brought the storyline together. I was never disappointed, to be honest, with the understanding, obviously, that, you know, we had 24-hour days. And, you know, for production to be able to try and capture the essence of those days within a 40-minute or even less was phenomenal. So I really loved the storyline. I enjoyed watching it back. And reunion was phenomenal. I mean, I loved just reuniting with all the castaways, being able to, you know, to just make peace and with those that you loved and with those that you didn't really like and with those that really, you didn't get time to really get to know. We got to know each other and party away. What a phenomenal experience, really.
Yeah, well, I would love to go back to before you applied. What was your experience with the show? Had you watched a lot of it before you decided to go on?
You know, Shannon, I'm a bit embarrassed to say no.
That's cool.
I'm not a big Survivor fan, not at all. I had been privy to watching Survivor, obviously, and it's been on our screens for years. But I'm one of those that have never really, I can't even begin to say that I'm a true fan. You know, I've caught it here and then. But my son is a total fan. He was 15 at the time. Total fan of the show. And without my knowing, this young man, I've got an open policy around laptops and devices in my house. So without my knowledge, they went onto my computer, both my children, and applied for me because for them, it was the one show that would, it was a give back, I guess, from them. And I'm still trying to wrap my head around it. It was for them to just say, you know, you're such a super mom. I'm a single mom and you're such a super mom. And we think you'd do well in Survivor. Just go and experience it. It was something they loved, something that they follow. They are true fans and they believed I'd make for a great castaway. And that's how I got into the show. So
I love
me
that
finding out. Yeah. So me finding out, I really had to jump onto the wagon and try and do a lot of binging of the show, which I couldn't because I was then thrown back with a lot of, you know, the game itself is just, it's one of, it's weird when you're not really a fan because then you sit there and you're like thinking, oh my God, how devious, how this, how that, it's plotting, it's this, it's that. And I was just trying to say, do you really love me? I don't know. I don't feel loved at this moment. And you know, going into it, I realized the honor in them just trusting me to do this and just thinking that I'm worthy of this type of thing. And, but I went in there totally blind. I must be honest. And the entire process of getting on was just long and it was hard. And, you know, I was taking a day at a time, and I was complaining through it. I was telling them about it. I was telling them the interviews are hard. I was telling them the psychometrics were difficult. It was just difficult. And I just kept on saying, are you guys sure? And they were like, Ma, just trust us and trust yourself and just go have fun. And I left home with just one instruction. Don't be the first to get voted off. And I didn't even understand what that meant. And that's what I was supposed to do. I was just supposed to survive day one.
Oh, my God. So wait, so when did you find out that they had applied for you? Like, did they tell you after they'd done it? Or did you like get like a call from production? Like, what?
Well, the process I take was, so you know, it came up on our screens to apply. So they applied, they send a video that I had had of riding, which is not necessarily even up on the, you know, because they hit it. But it was one of those that they sent through to production. And then they received a mail back saying that, congratulations, step one, or something of that nature, you've made it through. step one. And then they responded again. I don't know what was needed. And they responded and sent that. And then by the time the second response came, they then realized, oh, shit, we really need to tell her. So they both set me down and tried to give me the whole, you know, survivor, right? Yeah, I know survivor. You know, and they tried to give me, to educate me around it first. And I thought, okay, which one of you is going on? And they were like, you. I was like, oh my God. And yeah, that's exactly how it happened. So that, and that then allowed me to jump onto the wagon and start being active and understand, you know, go through the process.
Okay, I'm obsessed with the fact that your kids catfished production. They need to go on Survivor. Like, they are super sneaky. Like, they will be good at the game.
Look, it's my son's long life dream. I mean, if this young man can make it onto Survivor at the age of 19, I think he will give his left arm.
Oh, he needs to go on. He'd be great at it. So he signed you up without your knowledge. When you find out you're going on, considering you didn't even want to apply or know what you were doing, what is the feeling there? You must be like pretty nervous, but I assume kind of excited.
You know, I actually didn't think I'd make it. To be honest. So I keep going, you know, production, they quite active. They'll call you in and you'll go for a certain bit of it. So it comes in processes. So you'll do the first medic, or you'll do this, or you'll do the psyche evaluation. And then you'll do, you know, as it's happening, I'm thinking, I'm not the candidate. I don't think that's what they're looking for. To my surprise, when they call me in, I mean, that when it dawned on me that there's a big possibility that I'm making this, is when they call you in for the panel interview. Mm-hmm. And so at that point, the suspense is so much, because it's overwhelming. The suspense is so much over a period of about 3 months or 2 months at least. And I remember going into that panel interview and walking into MultiChoice and thinking, okay, this might be, maybe they just whisk you off. So I went dressed. I went completely ready for anything. And, you know, I walked in there and only to find 20 big guys sitting on this long table that seemed like forever. It was just going on and on. And there was this people glaring at you and looking at you and asking you questions and firing on. And at some point, in that interview, I was just, you know, I was just honest. I at some point, there's just one question that throws you off. You can only answer to a certain degree the questions the way you think people want to hear, or the things you think people want to hear. But at some point, one question throws you off, and then the true nature comes out. And I remember that moment immediately, because then the true me just came out in that interview. And at that point, I was like, you just threw it in the bin. And I remember that opened a can of worms where everybody now was shooting at me. And every question that was coming out, I was just shooting back with just real answers. And at this point, not even thinking about them, or not even thinking about giving the right answer back. And when I walked out of there, I was like, I remember making a call in my car and saying to them, guys, I don't think I made it. The second thing you asked me is never be myself. And unfortunately, they broke me and I was me. And my son, I remember him saying, did you yell at everybody? I'm like, I didn't yell. I actually don't yell. I just became me. Mm-hmm. And he was like, oh, no, Mom. And that weekend we spoke about it and he was like, okay, maybe you won't make it. And then the phone call came in, right? And the phone call said, congratulations, you've made it through to the next step, to next round. I'm like, what are they smoking?
I love your son. He's so savage. He's like, oh, no, you were your true self. And now this whole jig is up. You should always be yourself. Like, I feel like I'm coming in with the opposite thing. I think being yourself is the right advice here.
You know what? I totally agree with you. I think that being yourself is the right advice. But, you know, as well, understanding me, I mean, I'm one of those people. I say it as is. I do it as is. I believe strongly in the principles that have raised me and what I've managed to hold on to. And my kids normally say there must be room for error. You know, you can't necessarily continue life like that. It doesn't work that way. So at times they think I'm too hard or I'm too out there. And so they were like, just try and rail that back a little bit, you know, just don't come out too hard. Don't diverize this thing. Don't, you know, and I don't know any other way. I don't know any other way to be. So yeah, at that point I just thought I'd lost it. But honestly, be yourself, bring you. And I think that's what they're looking for. I think they're looking not necessarily for the right answers and the person who's trying to suck up really. They really are looking to find the real true you so that they can make decisions and see if you can be a fit in the game itself.
Yeah. So when you found out that you were going on, what kind of prep did you do before you actually went to the island?
None. I actually went the opposite way. So, you know, I remember one of the guys came through to come do pictures at the house and still another interview. And at that point, I really did think that, okay, fine, I've gone this far into the process, I'm in. At this point, I really felt very confident about being in, right? And that was, I think, the last step of it. And I was, if you had asked me at that point, I was very sure that I'm going on to Survivor. There was no other way. I'd gone through this entire thing. They'd called me back. I didn't think I was making it past the panel interview. And if I'm here, they're coming for the picks. Definitely I'm in. They just want to see if I, you know, what I look like, what should I wear? And I was convinced. So I then started thinking, okay, cool. How much time do I have? Nobody was going to answer that. But in that not having the time frame of when am I leaving, you start trying to prepare, you know, physically and eating well and trying to drink as much water and doing all the things that, you know, going into a remote island would require you to do. And, you know, my like a bad diet, my body just went the other way. I started eating everything that was wrong. I couldn't exercise for the life of me. I gained weight in that time. And I think I was just binge eating. Because I didn't know what I was working towards. I had no clue what I was walking into. So I think the stress of it all just got me. I mean, I don't eat crisps, right? But I would go through 2 packets of crisps. I would have jelly babies. I was so bad in that time that I remember getting on that scale just before I left. And I thought, oh my God, what's just happened here?
Some people take that as a strategy. Like some people do want a little bit more body weight to go out onto the island because they know they're going to lose some. So then there's a legitimate strategy there.
No, I mean, I guess. I mean, I did hear. I mean, Leanne was one of those when I finally met her and we were at the island. I got to understand that she gained some weight to get onto the show. I think Steffi as well had said something of that nature. But with me, it was total default. It was just the not knowing. It was that, you know, just that nervous space where you just eat for comfort because you just don't know what you're walking into. And every time I tried to watch past Survivor games and all of that, they just always just, I was like, I don't belong here. And so I'd get more nervous and I'd get, you know, and it just spiraled out of control. So, you know, yeah. So it maybe it did work for me. I don't know.
Well, okay. You're going to get to the island. You get there on the Sa'ula tribe, arrive on the beach, and your kids have said, just don't be first boot. And, you know, from the get go, you know, you choose a leader and that's Paul. And then you're called out as the weakest. So having, you know, that pressure from your kids, what was that feeling like in the first moment of the game?
It all starts on the boat. So we all get onto the boat and I look around, and as I look around, I'm like, OMG. I really don't believe you belong somewhere. You know, when you just look around and everybody is a physical being on the boat that you're on. And I'm looking around and I'm thinking, oh my God, I'm not going to survive this. Because the one thing that, you know, I got into the game thinking is that you need some physical strength. You need to be a physical being. And my boat, literally with the Sa'ula gang at the time, I just thought, oh, yeah, I'm out first. So I knew it. So when we get on that mat and, you know, Nico says, choose a leader, and we gravitate towards Paul. I think it was Rob at the time who said, look, he's wiser, he's older, and he'd be the right person to just pick because of just age. And this guy is chipped. I mean, he's ripped himself. He's like a physical being himself. I'm like, okay. And the question becomes, you know, pick your weakest link. And he says, Sibe. It really, for me, that was it. It's true. I was the weakest link on that mat. And I did not take any offense of it. I got it. I knew it. And that's what it was. And I was like, okay, we just have to survive one day, you know. And I had shut off from home and anything that would take me back and make me weak in the game, that I was living the moment. I wanted to be present so that I don't miss anything, because I understood that everybody that I'm with most probably is like my son, is a fan. So they know what to look out for. They know what's happening. For me, it was listen attentively so that you are able to get through these things. And there must be clues around. There must be clues on what Nico is saying. There must be clues just on the patterns of the mat. There must be clues on how everything is set out. So I was really present. That didn't throw me off at all. Actually, I was like, okay, fine, let's get it over and done with. I am the weakest link. What next?
And the best thing about it is that your son was like, don't yell at people, but you're like, this is who I am. And then the challenge was a yelling challenge that you had to be in charge of, and you dominated it. So that was lucky.
Yeah, I mean, what a great first challenge. You know, because I think that if it was any other challenge, I can tell you that I would have gone home that day. It had to be that challenge. And I'm also glad that, you know, Paul was the one who was taken out to this island, the secret, because I just think that, you know, if we had ended up again at like the same way at tribal council and Paul was there, it would have been very clear that I'm the one going home, because then Leanne would have had, you know, Paul as an alliance, and the other four were already set. And I literally would have been on the oust.
Yeah, I mean, so with those that early Sa'ula, who were you kind of bonding with and not bonding with so much? I mean, did you have much of an issue with Paul?
No. I didn't have an issue at all with Paul. I just the numbers worked to send him to the island. At the time, actually, Paul was what I had seen in the boat. That was the guy that I would have easily gravitated to first. But I think that, you know, the dynamics, having him notice and being able to say that I'm the weakest link, I think he would literally have stumped his stump on the, and him being seen as the wise one and the one with authority, it would have stamped on me leaving, because I think he walked into the game thinking that this game, he needs physical people around him. So having him not there on the day, for us to literally build this first, the campsite and just be. I think that gave me an opportunity to still survive like I did. You know what I mean? Mm. So, but I really do like Paul. I did like Paul as well. But, you know, for me, it was also, I'm unable to do the fake, let's get together day one, new friendship type of thing. So I was about sitting back and understanding individuals, trying to figure out what makes everybody tick. What are they about? It took me at least about 5 days to get into the making solid relationships, really. And for them to trust me, because I literally was, even when you watch it, you can almost see that, you know, I kept to myself. I literally just kept back. Wanting to understand, and it was very clear. I called them the Mighty Four when I was sitting with Leanne, and I kept on urging her to say, Leanne, go in there. That the four is already decided. Just go in there and try and be part of this. Trying for her to understand that Paul is not here. Take the opportunity. Don't worry about me. You need to get in there, because if you don't, this moment will pass. And unfortunately, that's exactly what happened to her. You know what I mean?
Mm. But were you worried at that point that, you know, with this really obvious four, you and Leanne on the outs, were you worried that your kid's greatest fear of you being the first boot could come true?
No. It was never happen. And I'll tell you why. It was never going to happen. Leanne was very emotional. She, by day three, it was very clear. She literally was, she the elements were so harsh. I mean, you are dropped on an island, and I don't think anybody could be prepared of the heat, then the rain, then the storm, then the cold, then it's dark, the bamboo itself. The fact that we've got no evolution, nothing. You literally are thrown on an island as is. All of that was working on her psyche, and I automatically knew that she was struggling. And what didn't help as well, she was vocal about it, you know, constantly emotional, constantly moaning about everything that was happening. And I already knew then that that's the person to go. So it was just to make the rest of the group to understand that you cannot, as much as you are, she might be physical, being physical doesn't work for you if your mind is not in the same, it's not right. And her mindset was not right at that moment.
Mm. And then in terms of the, you know, the amigos before you were inducted to be an amigo, did you have good positive relationships with them individually, even if you weren't part of the group? Because I know something that was kind of alluded to on the show was that Nathan was really vouching for you.
Nathan and I hit it off, you know, immediately. Nathan is such a lovely guy, very sweet individual, cares literally about everybody. And yeah, he was the first person that I forged a relationship with. It was nothing big, but we were truthful from day one. And I like people like that, because I'm truthful like that. I say it as is and as I see it. And he was the one person I was able to have real conversations with. And that allowed me the time to be able to share and to communicate and give him my understanding of what I'm noticing and seeing. And so we gravitated to each other very quickly. However, I wasn't buddy-buddy with everybody and him in the sense of the friendship level. It was just a matter of, these are the facts. This is who I am. This is what I'm seeing. You know, it was, let's build this thing. Let's be comfortable. For me, it was about having a sense of home. Let's create a place whereby we can call home, because it's going to get rough. And I understood that. I understood that the game of Survivor is rough, but there's got to be one place where you can breathe. And I literally wanted that to be the campsite itself. I wanted it to be, you know, out there we could be whatever else. So he understood that, and he appreciated that. And he appreciated how I, you know, he met me very quickly. He met the real me very quickly. And he was sincere, so was I towards him. And I could see, I mean, Steffi, from onset when she arrived on the island, this person here is very what's the word? So Steffi is competitive in her nature. That's who she is. And I was like, okay, you know, it's going to take a long time to get around that. And then there was Nicole. Nicole was sweet, but I think Aswell was taking her time. And that she had, I knew from the onset she had a history with Leanne, because Leanne was very vocal, and I spend a lot of time with her, very vocal about their past together. So I was like, okay, fine. So that there is going to take me a while to also wrap myself around, because now I've, you know, I'm seen to align with Leanne. And then Rob was also, Rob is a sweetheart of note, but as well, he was taking his time to understand. If you weren't physical, he couldn't see past that. It was going to take him time to warm up to any other idea of the fact that you need other elements rather than just being physical on the game. So that's where I found myself. But I had really good rapport with each individually.
Mm. And how does the dynamic change? Paul comes back. There's this like group idol hunt, and then the idol is found. How in on that were you?
I was never in on that. I mean, Paul came in and off the bat, I was like, okay, so Paul is here to play the game. That's all he's about. He's about the game, and there is no other room to maneuver. It's about what can I offer this guy? And he's kind of summed up, and he's had a night on the Island of Secret to think around strategy. So he's thought, everybody else is physical. Who's not? How am I going to get back in there and be in their good grace? And who do I need to get into my side to, you know, and I was seeing it in him, because he arrives and he's got this clue that he could keep to himself. And he just does the Father Christmas thing. You know, I've got the idol. It's all, you know, for all of us. You know, let's all find it. Kumbaya. And I'm like, what a way, you know, what a way to literally slide in there and become part of the four and gain trust. And I was like very wary of that then at that point in time to say, maybe I need to relook at Paul, because Paul seems like he's really off the bat playing this game. And I need time. I need somebody who can just go at a certain pace. He's going at a very fast pace, and he was going at a very fast pace for me. And yeah, and I didn't trust that. I was like, you can't trust that. You've got to at least, you know, find your feet. Literally just take a breath and say, I am in the middle of Samoa, you know? And he wasn't doing that. He was just going off. And I was like, okay, how do I balance this thing? And yeah, so I was never part of it. I literally stayed back when they were going out there and hunting for it. They came back once they had found it to say, we found it. And I didn't even get to touch it, because it was so clear that it's theirs. You know, as much as they're saying it's a tribe idol, and it was so clear that it was, yes, for the five.
Yeah. And, you know, yeah. you campaigned to that tribal council. When I spoke to Rob, he said that really opened his eyes to like all the value that you had for him in the game. And, you know, so do you feel like a lot of that was on you and not just kind of Leanne being emotional and her issues? Like, do you feel like you had a large part as well in helping yourself with how you campaigned there?
You know, so it didn't make the cut. It's the night before, I think, or leading to tribal council, rather, let me put it. We have conversations on the island, and we had started having conversations with one or two you guys. And I was like, you've got to make a decision very quickly. That conversation had started maybe just before that to say, you've got to start making decisions for yourself about what do I need to survive so we can all be strong. And I'd started saying things like that. We can all be strong, but at some point, all of us being strong, how does that help? You know, in a family dynamic, if you look at a family dynamic, we don't all have to be the masculine people or men or women, or, you know, every other element counts. It makes up for a strong family. What makes up for a strong family? And those were the things that I was starting to say. And I started to say, be honest about what makes you weak as well. What would bring you down? And that, I think they had already started hearing me because I was consistent on that, to just say, open your eyes to what is it that I need going forth? Don't have a short-term plan or an obvious plan. It's very obvious how we've been stacked together. And it's very obvious that you guys have been and I was always removing myself. You guys have been stacked together because you are physical, and you will literally take everybody at challenges. But I think that you need to start looking at those that aren't and start thinking to yourself, why are they put within us? Because somebody's got to ground you. Somebody's got to be able to be home for everybody. And I know how to do that best, you know. And by the time we hit tribal council, I could literally just now express myself fully as to what I meant when I was having these pocket conversations, which then started making sense. And everybody at that point in time was starting to see it as Leanne was breaking down at tribal council, and she was being emotional. It worked towards as well what I was saying and what I'd noticed.
Yeah, I was so impressed in that second episode that it's like you weren't really an option. Like, it became Paul who was shady, and then, you know, Nathan was injured, and even at tribal council, the fact that they like went out of their way to whisper to you as well, I felt like really credited how far you'd come. Did you feel like you had really gained some power in the tribe by the time you got to that second tribal council?
Absolutely. My second tribal council, when we were voting out Paul, is that what we're talking about?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So by the time we were voting out Paul, I already knew that my word counted for something. And, you know, when we were sitting there, I mean, we walked in to tribal council and I was still up for elimination. Guys were still thinking me. As much as Nathan was emotional, and Nathan didn't want to hold anybody back, and he was injured, and, you know, he was just, he really didn't want me to go. You know, he thought I still have game, and I thought he still has game. And again, I didn't think that he was ready to leave the game. I really believed, truly, honestly, that this young man has something to offer in this game. And it's what has happened is unfortunate. And if we cannot see that, and if we're going to just vote one guy out because of injuries, and it has been, he's been cleared by medic to say that, look, it's you will heal. You know, you're not in danger. Yes, you are injured, but you're not in danger. At that point in time at tribal council, I mean, I looked around and I was like, I think you can almost see it. I literally nodded Paul, and everybody literally just started saying, okay. And the confusion started there, and we just all decided that Paul is the guy. And that was the first blindside, really, honestly, because I think Paul literally didn't walk into tribal council knowing that I'm leaving. It was clear that Nathan is going to be the one that was going home. If not, they would have blindsided me if it was not Nathan. But at that point in time, for me, it was very clear that, you know, you need, they were already, the four were already tight. And how I saw it is that, you know, you're going to have Paul who's going to literally bring a drift amongst you guys. So it has to be the guy to leave. And that's why after that, I was like, the right five is here. So whatever happens after this, then it's the game. But the first two people that left had to be the ones that leave. And I was very clear about that because I'd taken out the time to almost assess everybody.
Hmm. You know, and after this tribal council, you're going to be like inducted as an amigo. So your relationships have obviously come very far in a short amount of time. Around this time and heading into the swap, how was that closeness between you and the other four amigos?
Look, the first, like the first 5 days were hell, right? It was just me on the oust, and it was very clear. And I think it was day six or so when now we come back and I'm being put into part of the amigos, and by Steffi, it really meant a lot. It just said to me, I can start breathing. I think that's where for me being comfortable, or rather being able to say, sure, I am now part of something, really began. Because I'd just been on tiptoes, and for as long as I had just arrived at the island, I had not had time to breathe. I was always on the chopping block. And that night really meant a lot for me. And yeah, it really did. And literally being invited onto the Amigos by Steffi, because like I say, Steffi is a force to be reckoned with. I mean, Steffi is really, you know, physical. Steffi is, you know, competitive. Steffi is she's a beast in every way. And you literally have to work hard to warm up to have Steffi warm up to you. And for her to have been the one to say, you know, I'm sorry, I didn't see you there because you took your time to literally open up. And now we do. I'm sorry it's taken us this long. It really meant a lot.
Mm. And, you know, this is something I asked Rob, but I'd love to hear from another Saula member's perspective. Rob was given the idol by Paul, the Saula idol that he had throughout the entire game. And I asked him, like, were other people, you know, wary of that? Did they ask for the Saula idol back? Did they ask for it to maybe go to other people, considering he really didn't have it by, like, extreme intention? It was kind of by chance that he had it. So was there talk between Saula about the fact that Rob now held possession of the idol and maybe it should be a little fairer, or were you all very happy for him to have it?
You know, let me explain Rob's energy to you. I knew that Rob is king from day one. Okay? This guy has an aura about him that is just insane. He has a peace around him. He's got a beautiful spirit. And then it shines out his eyes. Right? Mm-hmm. He is honestly, you know, I said it to him. I think if he has a recollection, I used to say it to him even on the island, to say, kings are born. And you know, and you are one of those. He just has the spirit that you just, he was always the guy that was going to be the final three for me in my headspace. It was always just that. So nobody even thought twice around, let's take the idol, you don't deserve it, around your neck. It was, you trusted that it was safe. If anything needed to be safe in that game, and it needed for safekeeping, I swear, I think every single one of us would have handed it to Rob for him to keep it safe because of the energy he has. So that at that point in time was the biggest thing that we had as a tribe to keep safe. And who else to keep it safe but Rob, because of just the energy he possesses, just the kind of human being he is, the love that exudes out of Rob and the peace, he's really kingship type. He's royal in his blood, that guy.
Hmm. Well, moving to the swap, you're going to get to New Lao Mei, and you're going to have these new relationships. But Tanya is someone who chooses to be on that tribe, I think largely because of you. What had happened when you as a tribe exiled her and put her to the Island of Secrets, but she felt so grateful and connected to you specifically. How did you manage that?
You know, so we'd gone through so much as the Saula tribe itself. And I remember the challenge that it was the one in the water, right? And I was paired with Nathan, and Nathan was still injured. And in the water, what then happened is that because we were fighting for our lives and Rob and them had literally gone to the wrong goalpost, right? And it was up to us to at least tie at that point. So Nathan and I went and we fought. I mean, what seemed to be 5 seconds was a long time. It was really, I mean, we were in that water for a very long time, for about maybe 20 minutes, if I'm correct. And in there was a time where I literally dunked Tanya. I sat on her and used her. Okay. And I literally, she was gasping for air because half the time she would be in there and I'd just bring her up enough for her to breathe as I was holding on to her. And, you know, eventually they managed to pull us and to the end, but I felt so horrible, as we came out the water, because I knew what had happened in that water. That woman literally almost drowned. She says it, I think at some point, she says that, you know, Sipe almost took my life, and then see, I think something of that nature. Mm-hmm. And she's breathed life. What she really means, she means it. I sat on her and used her as an anchor for a while. For 20 minutes is a long time, you know, and we literally fought it all out. And eventually Nathan couldn't anymore. His foot was hurting, and eventually they managed to pull us out. And I felt horrible because that 20 minutes, she must have gone through hell. So, you know, as we were dispersing, and I then said to her very quickly, sorry. And I didn't even know if she heard it or not, because tribes were going their different way. But then when we had to choose somebody to go to the Island of Secret, it became so easy for me to just say to the guys, listen, guys, because we had also spoken about it at camp. And I'd be like, you know, the best thing to do would be this woman. And everybody was like, yes, because we'd all been vocal about what had happened in that water. And so it was the right thing to do. And we also knew she was in trouble. You could almost see it. She was always on the outs with her group, you know, and it was the best thing to save her at that time. And we knew we were throwing a lifeline towards her.
Yeah, so you get to the swap, you're meeting a lot of new people, Dural, Rosalie, Jacques, and Tanya is your new tribe. What were those early relationships like on Lao Mei?
So the early ones, I mean, Tanya gets to choose to come to our tribe, I think because she understood what had just happened. And we had those eye moments and those, you know, we'd pass commentaries in somewhat way. You know, you look at somebody deep in their eyes for them to know what you mean. And we had that connection. It was great to have her there. And, you know, Jacques, so who did I have in that tribe?
Jacques,
it was
Lao Mei. Yeah, Rosalie.
Jacques was amazing. Jacques was the first guy to say it, you know, it's, I look forward to playing with you. And I had no clue that I was meeting a brother, you know, with Jacques there. Our relationship with Jacques on screen, you can't see it, you know. Jacques and I literally hit it off like a house on fire. I mean, that guy there is pure heart. And we connected that way because I'm pure heart. We were just there, both pure hearts. And I understood that he doesn't want to win at all costs. And you see, the one thing that I was about is that, or rather I'm about even in real life, is that you should never do everything at all costs. You know, you should be cognizant of how you arrive at a destination. You know, you can't demolish everything to get to the destination, because then you'll have nothing to celebrate because you've killed everything, right? Mm. So I liked his outlook. I liked the guy I had met. And he brought out himself in such a, you know, the game is so horrible that you've got nobody to trust you. And he was vulnerable. He opened up himself. The true Jacques was there, and I got to meet him, and I fell in love completely with him. And so did Tanya. Tanya, I got to understand that, you know, a lot of people didn't understand Tanya, but somehow, if you just take out a time and you listen to people and you chat to people and you just don't do the judgmental thing, you're able to meet the true person. And I had met Tanya, and I literally was, I think for the first time on the island of Samoa, I didn't feel like an outcast. I didn't feel like I had to work 10 times hard for just people to like me for me. You know, people just generally liked me. This felt like the relationship Nathan and I had, because every other I felt like I needed to work towards. And here it was just individuals understanding that we are in a difficult place, but, you know, we need to stick together until merge. And it's, you know, let's just, and it was home. For some reason, you know, it felt like home. What then became the Band of Misfits? I think that's how it became. It just was home.
Because Tanya really did seem, from the edit that we saw, to mellow out on this new tribe when she was kind of zany at Ta'alo. Like, what was it really like with her? Was she telling crazy stories and kind of seeing that, like, more frenetic side that we saw in the edit? Or was she that mellower person that we did see on the show in Lao Mei?
Tanya's, I didn't meet the crazy Tanya. That's right. How we speak. Yeah, that's what we call it. Like, the person that was telling crazy stories that I heard of, but it's the mellow Tanya that I met. And I think that as well for her, you see what Lao Mei did is that I think for her, it was the first time she could breathe and didn't need to be anything but herself. You know what? I don't know if that makes sense. So the same feeling I was feeling, I think she felt safe and she didn't need to come up with all sorts of stories if we were made up. I don't even know because we never even got there. I didn't even meet that person. I kept on hearing about that kind of, you know, that Tanya. But the woman I met to date, I can say that that's somebody that I'm keeping for myself. She is a phenomenal woman. She literally is true heart. She's a free spirit. You know, she if I had in my life met a gypsy, I would say Tanya. She's really peace loving human being that just I can't even. I watched the look. I did watch this episode, you know, and I can't wrap my head around the Tanya I'm seeing pre Laume.
Well, you know, with the loyalty of Saula, they send you to Island of Secrets just in case you're not okay by yourself. Little did they know, you know, that you were running the things. I think Rob really beautifully said on our podcast that, you know, they threw you to the wolves and you came out leading the pack. But they send you to Island of Secrets and you have to miss this first vote. So what were your feelings about that? And if you had been on the island, what did you want to happen?
Look, I mean, so tribal, when drop your buffs happened, it was just after the night where Steffi had literally welcomed me into the Saula tribe. So I was for the first time feeling safe, for the first time feeling like I could stop tiptoeing, right? And so when drop your buffs happened, I was scared as hell because that meant starting again. And if it meant like anything as the past few days that I've experienced, OMG. I didn't know if I had it in me. And, you know, so immediately on that mat, I knew I was safe. Like I say, there was just a piece about Jacques and I knew Tanya and we were both safe and I knew I was okay. So when they sent me off, I felt like, oh my goodness, I'm missing out on now literally being able to, you know, being able to literally just cement what I'm feeling, that I'm safe, the safe feeling. This is actually going to be the thing that makes me unsafe, because what happens if those bonds, you know, at the island develop outside me being at the island a secret? And I was at the island a secret and I didn't even feel like I didn't get anything at the island a secret. So I hated being there. You know, the adventure was just, you know, to miss tribal council. And I just thought, that's not enough. It's costing me the game. And so, yeah, I was really nervous to have been sent to the Island of Secret because I didn't know if coming back, what would be. And to be very honest, Jarrell and Rosalie, I was hoping that it's Rosalie that has to go because Jarrell had a, you know, he was an easy go guy. You know, he made jokes and he was very goofy around himself. And I knew that I could work my way with him. Whilst Rosalie seemed deep, man. It seemed, and I didn't need that at this point in time. I didn't want to work towards any relationship. I just needed to breathe for just a few minutes.
Yeah, well, I mean, they do vote out Rosalie and you get to this next vote where Felix is going to go home. He's like the one person we haven't spoken so much about that you met. Did you connect very much with him one-on-one?
Felix, we did. I think I'm the only person that Felix actually tried with. Okay. Felix didn't try with anybody, really, honestly. And he... Felix is, it's almost like a Steffi, a very competitive guy. But the thing about Felix is that his energy about it is just wrong as well. You see, he does this thing that for me didn't sit well. He's not a team player. So even if you are, he just didn't treat the other guys well. You know, if that makes sense. It wasn't even, it was just in his mind. He disregarded everybody, you know? And I didn't take comfort in that, in the, he likes me, because I don't operate from that. I'm all about, I like seeing people, how they treat other people. So, you know, you can't treat me only well and then you literally dog everybody else. And there was that sense about Felix. He just was not nice. You know, even at Challengers, Felix wasn't nice. I mean, I arrive onto the challenge where we're doing the big puzzle, if I'm not mistaken, correct? Mm-hmm. And he couldn't be bothered, you know, let's just get this done with over and you know, just tell me what to do. All we require is for you to just remember one thing. You know, if you can remember, if you can see a turtle, green turtle or a blue spider or whatever it is, and just remember that it's on block number 1D and the other one is block, whichever block. And that's all you need to remember. And then we can work around. But he couldn't be bothered because he hated being on our tribe. And it was so clear and he thought we couldn't see it. But he really was disregarding of every single person that was on that tribe. And I didn't take lightly to it. It really wasn't cool. It wasn't nice. Being on Survivor itself is tough enough to have someone constantly treating you like a loser. And that's how we felt. You know, he felt that he was in the losing tree team and he treated us as such. And having it come from Saula, where I was always on the back foot and got to understand that Tanya came from a back foot and Doral came from being on the back foot. So did Jacques, had made mistakes and therefore was on a back foot. I was like, no, guy, no, you just... So no, Felix for me was just, he was a constant reminder of just the nasty and the not nice. And for the first time he was surrounded by, you know, the not so physical, the not so fit, not so cool kids, you know, but you're not going to treat us such in our own camp. And that's what it was. So I guess I don't speak much of him because that's just, I didn't take kindly to just the kind of person that he was.
Yeah, because when he leaves, you're going to really claim being the misfits, you know, and that's a good thing. And that's what bonds you all together. So if he's looking down on that, when you guys see it as a strength, I can see how that really doesn't jive. Because as soon as he goes, you do come together, this beautiful foursome, the band of misfits. So in consolidating that and finding out some of the new info that you did with Jacques and, you know, Advantage and later Idol, what was that experience like?
Look, I mean, you know, we were just that. And I think it was Jacques who just said, this here is, you know, we remind him of, we should call ourselves the Band of Misfits. And it just seemed right because that's what we were. And it was just about, you know, when, so I believe in being able to work with everybody and being able to pump everybody so much that they don't believe that they're less, that they go out and they fight as a unity. And if you are a unity, you're able to conquer anything. And we show that off when we literally get onto that mat and literally start winning where people didn't see it coming. And we never needed Felix in the first place. You know, he didn't add anything. You know, even on it, and it was clear, and we just needed to have, and we were fighting for just being noticed and being seen. And I think that that's what it was. And we just show, for me in Survivor, I can actually say to you that being on Laomai with that four was one of my highlights. It was one of my highlights because never have I been in a situation where I am seen as weak and with other weaklings and be able to just showcase that it is all about the mindset. If you work towards a common goal and this true love, and this true respect and this true, you know, there's just wanting to win for the next and wanting to work for the next. And there's, you know, that for me was just... It was tough. It was tough, but it was the one thing that I take away. I think my Laomai days are what I take away the most in Survivor. Having to watch us having to vote Tanya out, that was also very difficult. You know, and at that point I knew that, you know, this here is most probably the closest I've ever feel of connected to people. and any swap is going to take this away. And that for me was, it really was one of the most heartbreaking things. And having to let Tanya go as well, one of my biggest allies, was to give Jacques comfort. We had really spoken about it, because Jacques was always my person. You know, it was Jacques and Tanya, but I understood that Tanya and I are on the same space. So taking Tanya forward would be just for that alliance sakes, to say I've got somebody that is family with me, right? Mm. But Jacques, as much as he was family, we were very close, and we had a connection beyond. So it was never a question between. Actually, Jacques was never a question. He was never going anywhere. But I was like, if I take Tanya through, what would that mean going forth? If I take Gerard, what would that mean going forth? And I actually listened to Jacques, and he needed Gerard, because I then got to understand that I still, as much as the, you know, the amigos have separated, I knew how I had left the last night. There was a sense of comfort somewhat to say that I am part of the amigos. I've got other people on the other side. And this guy here doesn't have anybody. And if I literally enforce that we take Tanya through, it would be selfish of me, because then he won't have anybody except me. And at that time, I wasn't playing the game in a strategic kind of manner to want that for him, because honestly speaking, the conditions of the game were very harsh. And if you can have a semblance of somebody you could trust, or one person you could hold on to, I wanted that for you. And I played this game throughout, actually, that way. Most of the relationships, I mean, when we do move into Ta'alo and I'm with Rob and I'm reunited with him, the first thing I say is that, you know, to Rob, Gerald actually is a great guy. I plant that seed. When we, you know, I start planting the seeds that just says who my people are. And you want to know a Gerald. You want to be with a Gerald going forth. Gerald is really a good guy. He will do as, you know, he listens and he's loyal. Because for me, it was a situation whereby I knew that if that happens, and I knew that how people saw Jacques, if you can align yourself with Gerard, then we've got Jacques, because then you've got me and you've got Gerard on your side, and you've got Jacques literally by default. But I could never bring Jacques up, because I understood that Jacques was a threat, because, you know, he was known to be this wizard, this guy who literally finds every idol, this guy who, you know, as much as it's not also shown, it was really clear that people knew that Jacques was the guy who was finding everything. He was the guy with all the secrets and all the idols.
Yeah, so you're saying that if Jacques had come to you and said, I don't need Dural, it's up to you, Dural and Tanya, you would have chosen to keep Tanya.
Well, yeah. If Jacques had said to me, I don't need Dural and it's Tanya, then I would have gone Tanya.
Well, but what if he had no preference, what decision would you have made?
If he had no preference, I was definitely going through with Tanya.
Okay.
Tanya was always my preference. If he had no preference and he had not asked to keep Gerald, it was definitely going to be Tanya then, because then that works for me.
Mm. Yeah. So as you said, you did swap. You go to Ta'alo. I think you and Mike are the only people in the whole game to see all three beaches. You get back with Rob. You've got Jacques there. And you're meeting some new people, Letitia, Mike, Kulbis, and Rocco. Was there anything notable about those initial relationships with some new people?
Yeah, so again, I'm thrown into another. I didn't see that one coming. I must be honest. The last tribal swap, I actually was hoping at this point in time that this is me not knowing the game much, that you can't merge that early. But I was really desperate to just get to not start again. And, you know, I'm then thrown into another tribe. And in this tribe, I meet Mike, I meet Letitia, I meet Rocco. And Rocco is very nice. You know, Rocco and I gravitate towards each other, where he wants to, you know, he starts this whole thing of wanting to let everybody know on which ends, who's what, who, when, you know, who to trust, who not, and how you perceived. And he starts that. And I meet Kwabis, and I didn't know what to make of Kwabi. Kwabi was a loner. And so was Aquaman, you know? And so I'm thinking to myself, okay. And then there's Mike. Mike literally, he didn't take night kindly. I think I offended Mikey from day one. I don't know what it was, but with Mike, it was very clear. I mean, he wasn't on my camp. He was never going to be on my camp. And yeah, so I'm thrown with them, and I'm just thinking, you know, the worst thing is that now there's two Tannies, and that's how it's referred to. There's two old people in the tribe. Letitia was Rocco's person. You know, Letitia was literally being, for me, what it looked like was being carried through by Rocco, and I didn't take kindly at that. I think that at any given time, you need to start playing the game. At some point, you need to, you don't want to be that guy. The one other thing I knew is that you just don't want to be that guy that's just coasted to the end. But Rocco was so depleted, I think, at that point, that he knew that his time was up. And he was letting secrets go. And I think he was setting himself to being targets to leave. I personally think that. I think that Rocco didn't fight to stay onto that game at all. I think that Rocco, it was in the manner that, you know, it was like a man doing his last death wishes. You know, just, this is what I think. This is how I think you should play the game. This is, and I'm like, guy, you can't be giving out secrets like that. And you can't be making everybody see. You know, and his thing was, I want the tables, the field to be level. But there was a dangerous thing about that, and which then got him to go home. And it was, by that time, I was thinking, okay, I just need to get Gwabi on my side. And that is how the Spit Shaker 7 is born. You know, Kwabis and I have a conversation where he just is telling me and Letitia about his thoughts, what he thinks would work. And I then, being me, decide, okay, this could be something that could be used. So as soon as the group or everybody and is by campsite and we're just sitting there, I'm like, guys, you know, Kwabi has come up with a great decision. Kwabi, please let everybody into this. I think it's a great decision. And that's how Spit Shaker 7 is built, because just by listening to it, it gave me an understanding that if everybody bites into it, you're safe for a little bit longer. And so then became the Spit Shaker 7, then was born. And I'm grateful to Kwabis for actually even just thinking that.
Yeah, I mean, just going back to the Rocco vote before the Spit Shaker 7, because by the time the Spit Shaker 7 happens, you have the Amigos, the Misfits, the Spit Shaker 7. You're at, like, the cornerstone of every major alliance in the game, which is a good place to be at the merge. But, you know, going back, you know, firstly to the beginning of the swap, where you come in and you have the speech about basically, you know, the people who are physical threats, some people who haven't been to tribal council, and you've been to, like, pretty much every single tribal council, and you say maybe you didn't connect with Mike. From what we saw on the show, that was a part of what maybe put him off. So did you look back at the time like that was a mistake, or did you not see that as a mistake?
You know, here's the thing. It came out on edit, and I also watched it, and I mean, at that point, my son was like, you are going home.
I wonder what your son would think of that.
He's pausing at every moment. It's like he's pausing the television, he's looking at me, and he's going, oh my god, you are so going home. And I'm just thinking, that's not how it happened. You know, but a lot had happened to that moment. I'm not that's stupid, nor am I that egotistic, or rather that type of human that's just going to shoot off the, you know, just off the hip from nowhere. Rocco had started these conversations. We were already having a full-on, I had been listening for hours to conversations about what people thought right? How people, what people thought the game should be or what it should look like. And, you know, and it so happens that my that was my response and my 2 cents worth of 5 hours of listening to everybody. Mm-hmm. And it came across like I was just setting out the law. So, no, Mike had it. Mike was there. If that's what ticked him off, he's not being fair. Honestly speaking, I just think that he just didn't like the fact that, like you say, I was I'd survived Sewula, I'd survived Lamay. I'm coming into Natalo, and I'm seen as mom at this point in time. I'm very aware of the fact that I'm in the game. I'm very aware of the fact that I'm safe. I'm mom. My word counts. I'm at that point that you can almost see that, okay, you and Rob are close. You and you've got alliances and they're working, right? And just by opening my mouth and what I was saying literally was in total response of everybody's views and things that people were really afraid to say. And I was just saying, listen, guys, at this point in time, we need to start playing the game. And that was just a response to a whole lot of things that had been said. And it got thrown in that way. And yeah, it's how it came across. And it worked with the fact that I'm a big mouth. And I mean, throughout the show, I was fighting every single time. And the only thing I had to fight with was this mouth of mine. And so when they threw that in, look, it just seemed right. It seemed like it's something. And I was like trying to tell my son, that's not how it happened. And I'm telling you, that's not how it happened.
I want to get your son on a podcast. He seems like he's very discerning and he's like judging everything. I love it. But, you know, you talk about the Rocco vote, and I have heard from others that Rocco was kind of, as you said, like, saying his goodbyes and kind of ready to go. But if that wasn't the case, what would you have preferred happen, or were you happy for Rocco to go at that point?
You know, I don't like people to suffer, and I don't, you've got to want to be in the game. If that makes sense. For me, I was very aware that Rocco wants to go. He was hungry, and I understood that. This is a guy that is pure muscle. I mean, that guy is pure muscle. And if the rations that we were eating, I'm very sure he was suffering, you know. Somebody would argue, did he not know where he was going? Absolutely. I think all of us knew where we were going, but not, we weren't, you don't know until you are there, you know. And because he was, you know, Rocco was starting to see him, you know, steal a teaspoon of sugar there or an extra rice there. It was heartbreaking. This was a gentleman. This is an amazing human being. I'm being honest. And to be reduced to that, I think I'm a believer of things happen when they have to happen. And he left the game at the right time. I think that if he had stayed on, the game would have reduced him to, you know, it would have taken away the Superman. And I would like to remember him as that. And I'd like, and he had to go. And there's honor in knowing when your time is up. And if he really plotted that he has to leave and he was really just playing that card, it worked. And I take off my hat for him to know his limits, to know that I want to leave this game whilst I'm still strong and I still have a say rather than you're being reduced to something that I'm not. His physical state played a very big part. I mean, just from from a mom point of view, from nutrition, being able to always watch. I've got a rugby player in my house. I know what kind of rations he eats. I mean, he's a big human being. I mean, he's a position three, and Rocco is one of those guys. Rocco is a big beast. I mean, this is a, He's one of those. He's a javelinist, if I'm not mistaken. This is a guy who is a true sportsman. There was no way he would survive on what we were eating. He really made a good call, and I take off my hat for him. So I do believe that he plotted himself out of the game, and there's got to be some sort of, you know, respect to that. There is. I give him kudos to wanting to leave the game whilst he was in the game.
And now a quick break to hear from our sponsors. And we are back. All right. Well, Sipe, heading into the merge, as I said, you're part of the three major alliances that we as the audience have been shown. And heading into the merge, I would like for you to order these alliances in terms of your priority. So the Amigos, the Misfits, and the Spitshaker 7, how did you prioritize those three alliances going into the merge?
Sure. Oh, it's a difficult question. So for me, it was about individuals in those alliances.
Mm-hmm.
It was not about the alliances themselves. If I don't know if that answers you. So the Amigos, I loved the Amigos, and I love the Amigos to date. Right? They were my first family. I fought very hard to be part of the Amigos. I worked very hard to remain relevant within the Amigos. I mean, even throughout when we had to vote as in Lamé for somebody to go into the Island of Secrets. That was still me working towards showing my loyalty towards the Amigos by asking the Laomes to trust me in sending Nicole and Nathan to the island.
Mm-hmm.
This was very clear that I was an Amigo through and through, and I truly believed and wanted for the Amigos to be. I knew that the Amigos were the strongest ones in on the island, and being part of them would have secured me going forth. These were the cool kids, man. Honestly speaking, and if you are part of the cool kids, you know that your longevity. You know that you can survive longer, right? So they mattered to me a lot, but I had individuals in there. You know, Nathan being gone, gutted. Mm-hmm. But then I had Rob. You know, I had Rob. And Steffi and I, we were very open about the fact that we have a... She didn't trust me much. And she loved me, but didn't trust me much. She wasn't... She was very open about that. You know, I wasn't her go-to person at all costs and at all times. Me and Rob were tight. I mean, Rob and I... Rob was... It was never... a question that guy is ending up at the three. I think at some point later, I speak about him being in my even final three. I believe he was in everybody's final three, personally, if you ask me, whether people would acknowledge that or not. That guy was getting there regardless, right? So it was a matter of what kind of relationships stemmed high. And my relationships were just that within the Amigos, I had Rob. Within the Misfits, I had Jacques. Within the Spitshaker Sevens, I had Quibus. And that's how I saw it, you know. Nicole, I love Nicole, you know, and as a person. But Nicole started showing a bit of being unstable, not trusting, and that was making me uncomfortable. She had voted Nathan off. We didn't really understand why. And then she came back, she made peace, but still wouldn't necessarily, we had patterns of how we slept, and she had jumped ship to sleep on the other side, you know, with your mics and everybody else. And that was making me uncomfortable throughout. And then there was Steffi that at some point after merge, her and I were literally starting to see each other. And we had, you know, done a big, I'm sorry that it's taken this long. And, you know, it's because we had had that conversation out to say, look, we've never been one to be shy about how we feel about each other. You know, the fact that you're too physical and that's, you know, you, everything is a challenge. And, you know, and she was like, yeah, but you know, you are too forceful and that's how I see you. I don't trust that you have my back. And we had that out and we were trying a new relationship. But I also was very cognizant of the fact that, you know, her and Nicole were very, competitive as well. And I didn't think Rob was seeing that as what it was. And I didn't want them at any given time to be put at loggerheads, because that would have just, for me, it was just ugly. I didn't want for them to be picked one over the other. It just seemed so wrong when they were both as well trying so hard to be true to the Amigos, whereby actually Steffi seemed to be the most truth to the Amigos than Nicole was at lots of times, actually. So, you know, so the question of who did I put between on my alliances, it was more the people rather than the alliances themselves.
Yeah, what about someone like Letitia, who's in the Spit Shaker 7, and you, as you said, like the two Tannies, and she was kind of throwing your name out, though, like earlier in that post-post swap at like the Rocco booth. So what was your relationship like with her?
You know, Letitia, and Letitia was, I don't think I speak much about Letitia because, oh, am I going to get in trouble for saying this? Letitia is too default to being, oh goodness. Okay. So Letitia worked her way in, you know, there's just, there was times where I was having conversations with Letitia and I'm saying to Letitia, Letitia, you are here. Be aware that you're here. You need to, again, play the game. And we started seeing, and then Letitia started playing the game. I mean, Letitia, there were times when I was giving her props to say, let people see you for you. Don't be, you know, I didn't want to be part. I'm so proud of the fact that I played the game. I was in the game. I literally bled in this game that I never wanted to be a question that how did you get to day five, day seven, day. I was present and I wanted that for her. Look, you are a 56 or so woman, you've made it here. Understand it, own it. Don't come here and just still coast along. And, you know, she didn't take kindly a lot of times for me putting it out there because I put it out there a lot. And she moaned as well. Once Rocco was gone, she was a moaner. And I, one of the things that I had said to production is that, please don't put me with anybody who's just going to constantly manipulate by moaning. Oh, I'm this. Oh, I, you know, because I'm older. Oh, my foot is sore. Oh, maybe today shouldn't be the day. Maybe I should be voted out. Maybe at some point I was like, guys, I think Natasha needs to go. Let's put her out of her misery. Like, that's it. Like, enough now. I cannot. We've given her enough chances to understand that she deserves, like, every single person to be in here, and she needs to fight for it, and she needs to work towards this. And I think that put fire into her. And you know, that was it. And she knew at that point that I was done. I was done trying to do the, you know, hype me up, motivation for everyday type of conversation. It had gotten to a point that no. You either want to be here or not. So Letitia was that for most of the part. She, you know, her and I went through similar conditions. Our feet started swelling. I mean, I had cankles for ankles. They were huge. You know, we were all sleeping on bamboo. It was Aina. There was a time where my ankle, I mean, I limp on that show. If you really, really watch closely, you can see that I'm limping half the show because I'd sprained my ankle on day three even, and it wasn't coming right. And everybody knew. But never once is that made an issue, you know. We all had diarrhea. We had trench foot. We had, the conditions were harsh, guys. You have no idea. We were in so much pain, most of us. I mean, at some point, Rob had what seemed like a blister or a spider bite or something humongous on his thigh that I didn't even know if it would go septic or it was just insane. People were literally going through the most on this island. And all you could do is go into the salt water, try and take care of yourself. And, you know, there was nothing to help you. And so their moaning had gotten to me, and there's not much I can say for Letitia, really, honestly, because then what I think Rob did is just do what Rocco was doing with Letitia. And that's just that, you know. For me, the little that I had watched of Survivor is that I remember actually saying this to my kids and saying, you know, this game is so unfair. And they were like, what do you mean? I'm like, the real winners of this game and everything that I'm trying to watch, or the guys that should win, are always the ones voted off because of strength or because they are the wise one or because they, like, that's not going to happen on my watch. If somebody deserves and they work, I mean, what is so wrong in wanting to get to the top with the top guys? Why do people want to get to the top with weaklings and still call yourself a damn winner? I don't want that for myself. I just wish I'm with kind of people that want to get to the top and say, I've won the game against the best of the best within a season. And my son was like, you're so naive. That's not how it works. You must. I'm like, no, Papa, no. If you're going to call me queen of anything, I'm going to work with people. I'm going to choose the toughest and the strongest people to get to the top with so that I can be proud of my win. And that's how I hope you live your life. And my son would look at me and just think, oh, Mom, they're going to chew you out first. Please don't go with that mentality. Mm-hmm. You know? And that's literally how I viewed the game, because the little that I had seen and always when you watch Survivor, it's always the guys that should have been, could have, you know, the strong guys are always sitting on the jury. And I'm like, I didn't, you know, it's just you get voted out because you are strong and because you've taken the week through so long and or maybe the only physical, the guys that literally haven't played this game the hardest and you've got nobody to blame but yourselves, you know. And I was very clear that I had no time for that. So we had that type of relationship with Letitia, if that's what you're asking. It was constantly those kind of conversations, the conversations of, Letitia, I'm also going through the same. What do you need? Socks. I'll give you extra socks. What do you need? You can have my T-shirt if that's going to make you stronger. You know, mm-hmm. What is it that you need? Yeah. So that was the relationship I had with her.
Yeah. And so, as you said before, you know, Nathan goes and that's a blind side and you have to contend with the fact that Nicole has voted him out, but she does give you her half idol to make peace. So did that really mend that relationship with Nicole?
Whether or not Nicole had given, whether or not she had given me an idol or not. If you watch closely, idols were never my thing in this game. Even when Jacques was telling us about his idols and stuff, it was good to know that I've got somebody in my side that had them, you know. But I didn't bank my game on that, because that would have needed me to have to be strategic and play a strategic game, right? And that would have needed me to have some sort of knowledge or starting to scheme in a way that I didn't want to scheme. And that's what idols seem to have. So idols seem to throw you in a certain pocket of a game that you need to start playing. So when she did it, I truly just saw it as her wanting to mend somewhat way. And this was the only thing she could use as a symbol of mending. But that half idol really... half the time I didn't know where it was. I had to always be asked, where is it? Mm-hmm. Okay, I know where it is. Yes, you know what I mean? It wasn't something that I was so conscious about. Oh my God, I need to hide it. Oh my goodness. And I was preoccupied about it. It was just, I saw it as a true gesture of just saying, look, I know I've messed up. I know that I'm not trusted. I didn't do it from malice. It had to happen and was going to happen. We would have never known the truth anyway. But it was a sign of somebody saying that if I was wrong, I regret this moment and here's a peace offering. If I wasn't wrong, trust me, I wasn't wrong. It had to happen that way, but here's a peace offering. This is me showing you my bit and my heart. It was just a symbol of somebody who was still fighting to be in the game, to be honest. It was never about, oh, I've got an idol from her. No, it was really that. Because if you know, here's the thing. You know, Rob was gutted. You mm-hmm. have no idea just how gutted Rob was gutted. Rob would have never forgave Nicole, period. And with that happening, there were other alliances, you need to understand. You know, there was the Maba, Jeffrey, and Mike alliance, which was really clear. And there were people like Aquaman and Meryl. And for me, it was a situation, we need to keep those that we know, that we are close with, that we trust together, and we cannot let the Nathan thing now be that breaks us, because then it's over. Then the king himself is not getting to the top. And if he's not getting to the top, that means I'm not getting to the top, because it was very always clear in my mind that I'm going to the top with this guy, if you understand what I mean. Mm-hmm. So it was working towards getting him there as safely as possible, because I was safe with Rob, if you get what I'm trying to say. So that was my understanding. So keeping Nicole and making peace for her with Rob was important. It was important to the sanity of the game. It was safe for the tribes, for other people to not be able to infiltrate us. Because if we had lost her, that was a symbol of you can still trust me. And I knew what we had gone through at Saula, to know that she must still be in there. That there is still truth in there. And I knew that she still is part of us. You know, so that whole thing was about, she still wants to be part. She's making peace. And that was just that.
Yeah. You say that you want people that you don't know as well to go first. And it's going to be Meryl and Jeff, you know, two of the very, very few people on the season that you didn't get to meet by the time of the merge. What was your perspective on them going home in that order?
I knew nothing about them. I honestly didn't know anything about these two people. Meryl, I left. Honestly, that's how it felt. I didn't have a moment with Meryl at all, except hi, Sipe, nice to meet you. That was it. Okay. And I had just met her on mats, literally during challenges, and I didn't know her. And Jeff, I had a moment with Jeff, you know, where we shared one night under, you know, a very stormy night, and it was bad. And I mean, I was literally on the edge and I was getting wet. And he said to me, Sipe, you are getting wet. Let's swap. And I got to meet that guy that way, whereby he was like, let's swap. And he took my wet spot, and I got to have a moment of being dry. And he and Maba were always cuddling. So that also opened up for me being that close to Maba. And that started the conversations with Maba, because I had not met Maba. At this point, Maba and I were, good morning, girl. Hey, how are you? And that was literally it. Maba was not anybody I think people forgot even that Maba existed. She was just so quiet in the corner there, and she was between these two guys, which was Jeff and Mike, and they were her people. So at this point in time, this was opening me up to new possibilities, to even understand where their mindset was, because I wasn't trying to make new friends at this point. I really was about, I have enough. I'm already a misfit. I'm already an amigo. I'm already a spit safe shaker seven. It's just about surviving now. It's really just about understanding the other, you know, what then is called the loose change, to understand who's where and what are they thinking and what are the dynamics of those relationships. Jeff, really, honestly, I got to meet him on Ponderosa, if we can touch on that. And what a phenomenal guy. What a gentleman. One of the pure hearts. And I think if he had stayed on, this would have been a guy that I would have had some sort of, I would have found myself being forced, just by the nature of person that I am, to be, you know, to know him better, and most probably forge something with him. Because, you know, he, like I say, he started off on the right foot, whereby he didn't have to. He literally took when I say wet, I'm not talking about a couple of drops. I'm talking about where rain is literally pouring onto you and you are soaked. And he was like, no, take a spot. Come, let it be my turn. And that for me went a long way. So when I met him, he was truly that guy again when I met him at Ponderosa and I got to know him. Meryl is, I don't think Meryl and I would have managed to work together. She's also yet another free spirit. She's a beautiful person. Outside the game, definitely, she's somebody that I would want to go to, you know, hang out with. and do fun things with. Meryl is fun. She sings off the, you know, she sings about everything. She's just so free. She's a beautiful individual. But in the game, I think her and I would have not worked, you know, because her and Aquaman, Dante, were very tight. And Dante and I had no relationship. Dante kept to himself a lot. Dante was, when he did come out, he was brutally honest. And I was like, sure. And like, it was like literally from nothing to when you come out, you just like this guy who just literally takes no prisoners. And I could never get my head around him. So that relationship would have never worked on the island. So I'm almost happy that we only met at Ponderosa, because that then allowed me to meet Meryl's personality and fall in love with it as a person and be friends with it. But if it was within that game, no, I mean, she's a true flirt. She's one of those people. She's flamboyantly like that. She's just out there. In the game, she would have literally drove me nuts.
Yeah, well, I want to get to the episode where you end up going home and just ask like what your plans were at this point. Because from what we see in this episode, it's like you're throwing out Doral's name. He ends up being like the second part of the split vote of how you vote. You're trying to protect Marba, but you do end up voting for her. You've thrown out Letitia, Steffi, and Nicole. Like, that's most of the people. You know, we see that you want to go to the end with Jacques and Rob, but who else were in your long-term plans?
You know, so within the game, really, honestly, I it's just, even after when we're having these conversations, it took one thing to get me back into the back foot of this game. It was never because I was cocky. People believe that, you know, you then go into social media and people believe that you were too relaxed, no, or people believe that you were too cocky, and maybe, you know, one, people believe that I had so much power. It didn't feel like power at the time. And people, you know, and you look at it and you're just thinking, if only you knew. It just took two things. It took me saying to Rob, we will not, even that conversation, there's a conversation that's happening by the well when I'm saying to Rob, I know that you are very emotional, but there's that line. That line in context was to what then happened. And I'm saying to him, we need to shift shape the girls or something of that nature, shift swap them or something like that. What I was saying to Rob at that point is that, Rob, I'm not sure if you're seeing what's happening. You have Nicole, who's literally in everybody's pocket. I know that I brought Nicole back. I know that I've built this trust, and I know that you've taken her in. Okay. I'm okay with that. It is safe for us to have her close with us, but don't not see the fact that she is plotting with others. She has other relationships that she's not upfront and open about. I don't need to know them. They're none of my business. Here's the thing. Let's not find ourselves where that bites us, because I just think that she is working towards something else that we don't know. That was that conversation. And I said, and then you've got Steffi. Steffi is unsettled. She's unsettled because, you know, she's always just felt either we like Nicole more, or at some point we with her. And you need to understand how the amigos work. The amigos worked together all the time. If it meant that I was that was, you knew she's in charge at home, at the household, which is literally campsite. Rob, Steffi, Nicole, when we go into battle, you guys need to understand that you gotta be the one. Nicole, distract. Rob, you need to be out there and fight this to the end. But if you really can't hold on, the Steffi is just as much of a beast. So that's how it was really. We worked hard for every win, for everything that was out there, to get people off the game, right? But I started seeing that Nicole, and I could have been wrong, but it's just, I'm not, when I'm watching back, where Nicole literally, and when you literally get to Ponderosa and understand that she was friends with every single person, and she was, everybody thought they had Nicole. But when I started seeing this, I was just like, at some, you know, it was unsettling. It was unsettling, and I brought it to Rob at that point, and it seemed as what I was breaking the amigos, because you see, at that point in time, I don't think he was seeing what I was seeing. It is every story that everybody alludes to the fact that Nicole was never on your side 100%. She has been behind every plot. It was what I was seeing as well. So it was just that to say, don't get to a point where the girls have to fight each other. I wouldn't want that. Let's not break the legacy of the amigos in an ugly way, whereby you're having Nicole and Steffi against each other. So at 5 and 6 or 6 and 7, I don't care. We've got to get to a point whereby we then start chopping. And just at that, one becomes a 5, one in no particular order, and we can explain it later. Because at this point in time, we're going to get to the end, and it's going to be nasty. It's going to be nasty where you're going to have, it's not going to end well with, they just not, their heads, they're too paranoid. It's paranoid. I knew where I was. It was not even, it was about still the amigos and the legacy that he wanted, but it just didn't come across to him as a safe bet. And then I did the mistake of introducing Jacques, who then I understood that Nathan had left, having had a conversation with Rob that says Jacques is the guy to watch out for, you know, and I wasn't privy to that. For me, I was just giving him somebody that I knew would have been loyal in this whole thing to the end with him, and it would have made an epic finish where he wins against a guy that is worthy. You know, that type of thing. That was my mindset. It was never the cockiness. It was never from a malicious point of view. I wasn't even scheming at that point. It was to say the legacy of the amigos with the two girls is going to be ugly. It's going to just say, why, you know, we're going to have to scratch each other at some point. I don't want to play this game at that point like that. I don't ever want to find myself having to fight the two girls. So let's just end it at some point, because they're not working together. It's not seeming as so. It's just not coming to a point where we are one with them. And that's what it was.
Did you think that Rob would win if it was a final three of you and him and Jacques? Because that would have been an epic final three. Like, did you think that he would win that, or did you give yourself a shot?
You know, a final three like that, Rob was a beast. Rob would have, I think, would have won. He says that. He says otherwise. And to have seen Rob think of me as a threat, I didn't even think of that in the game. I know it sounds weird. I never saw myself as a threat. Because I thought being physical, winning challenges, there's a scorecard is what I knew. There's a scorecard to this thing. I'd played a social game. I'd been that had, nurtured and been the side of building everybody that I thought was great and aligning myself with greatness, because that's how I wanted it. If I thought you were great and I thought you were playing this game with a bit of integrity, and I thought that this game, you know, you were worthy of the end, you somehow became part of my alliance, or rather somebody that I had time for, right? Now, Rob, like I say, Rob was always that one of those seats were always Rob's. I knew this. He, at some point, he used to think I'm just talking out of my ass, really. But it was the truth. I really believe that Rob was going to win this. It was always the how. It was the how. I was fixated on, if you win this thing, it needs to be with the best guy. And the best guy was Jacques. I was always just too happy to be in the middle of two great guys. I don't know if that makes sense. I never thought of the win. I thought I'm going to be on the final with the two best players of this game. And that was my ultimate. My ultimate was sitting at final three with two of the most amazing players of this season to the top and to the final. And for them to be able to put it out there in front of the jury and be able to say why they deserve to win, and either or would have been a worthy opponent. That's where my headspace was. I never was against Rob to say, I want to be, I want to be at the end so that I can win against. No, I need never, or Jock. I want to be at the end so that I can be. No, it was to be among kings. For me, that's what it was. I didn't walk in this game. I didn't even think I'd make the days that I made, to be really honest. That's the truth. The truth is I was surviving. And to have survived this long by just being me and being nurturing those that I believed needed to be at the end. I mean, I was behind most of the relationships that are there. I mean, I could sit here and it sounds like I'm blowing my own horn. It's literally the Jarrell thing. I literally was behind Jarrell being Rob's person. I was just like, Rob, this is a guy to trust. I didn't think it would be at this level. You know, I just those kind of relationships and those things were I can safely see how I was part of them because those were the two people getting to the top. And even still, when you look, I'm like, OK, so you still have the amigos at the final and you still have a misfit. It's just in the wrong order. You see, for me, it was just the order of how it was going to be there. I mean, I think my final speech would have been so weird because I would have just been so grateful to be amongst, like I say, royalty, the two guys that have heart, the two guys that would have played the game with integrity, the two guys that deserved to be there. And I was amongst them. That was the story I was looking to finish with. I wasn't looking to finish with, you've won R1 million. I most probably would have died on the spot from a heart attack because I didn't see that coming.
Yeah, I mean, given that you were kind of working for Rob's success, were you ever suspicious that he was working against you? You know, when, you know, obviously leading this vote against you, getting the half idol back, did you have any suspicions of what he was doing?
Never. I never thought that Rob would see me as, like, again, if I was in the game thinking that I was a threat, I would have had my eyes open thinking that, okay, so I've become a threat to Rob. You see, I never thought that way. Because I was never in there playing for the end. Well, I never thought I'd be the end, the R1 million. And this is, again, walking into a world of Survivor and not being a fan or not understanding the game and not, if you understand. So I do take that. I mean, there's been criticism around the fact that there's been people who've seen that this girl here doesn't know this game. It's just truth to that. Throw me into Survivor years to come, right? Gone is Mama Bear. You, if you understand what I'm saying, there will not be Mama Bear. I will not be so fixated about playing an honorable game and being at the end in honor and being at the end at no cost. And because as soon as you say outwit, outlast, outplay, right? You are basically saying cheat, kill, go in there, daggers out, murder to be at the end. And this is everything I stand against, if you understand that. It's everything that I say. You can't be at the end and still be proud of looking back and you've murdered every relationship, every single person, every understanding that we went through such hardship. And so I walked in this game with my humanness, not a game. I don't know if I'm making any sense. I walked into this game and there was a sense of me in there, a lot of it, that walking back into the game, you know, if we rewind with the knowledge now, I would go in there to just murder. I'd go in there understanding that every single person that's here is not, I'm not here to nurture everybody. I'm not here to literally help anybody get it to the end. I'm here to destroy and conquer. The one thing I did is nurture a lot. And that took away from what would then be a game. So there was no time where I could say Sipe was playing a game. Honestly speaking, Sipe was there to just, I was too grateful to actually still see another day in the game.
Yeah. And you know, the only two people that weren't informed besides yourself was Jacques and Kubas. From your perspective, was there a reason, like in your relationship with Kubas, where you think he wouldn't have been informed? Or, you know, from other people's perspectives, maybe he just wasn't close enough with the others?
So Kubas and I had come to By this point, why he wasn't informed is because him and I were already getting close. Like I say, so I brought out the Spitshaker 7 out of him. Okay, I planted, he told it to myself and Letitia, and I was the one that said, everybody, you've got to listen to Cuevas, right? And that brought Cuevas out of the woodworks from where people just believed Cuevas was not trying to align with anybody, where people believed that Cuevas was, people missed Cuevas. Cuevas really is phenomenal. He's an amazing human being. And so that brought him out for everybody to be closest. The only person that Cuevas had time for was really Nicole. Cuevas and Nicole were really close. But I was part of that to say, okay, let's work at what you are saying. You deserve to be seen. You are here playing the game. So the reason that happened that he wasn't informed is because we had tea time, me and Cuevas. You know, Cuevas and I had little quirky moments, not great moments, where we would be like, it's tea time and we go make tea, or it's, you know, we had little fun things that we did and moments that found us sitting together, or the three of us with Letitia. And he was very fond of Letitia. And we would find ourselves, that was my three, and that was the other three that I found myself sitting with a lot. And we chat, and the conversations were not so much game, but so much of getting to know each other more, or rather of being able to understand from them what they thought of every other individual that we were with. And I used to like his take. So a lot of the time I would go back to Rob, or, you know, when we'd be sitting and with Jacques, Rob, and, or, you know, I'd be able to say, and Cuevas thinks this, that, because I thought it was really important to take what Cuevas thought into consideration. So that made, because now I understand that Rob then saw me as a threat, or rather Rob wanted me out of the game. He knew who were my people. He knew who I was taking seriously, and who I took real advice from, or rather I took their opinions very important. And Cuevas was one of those, and that's why he then was left out of that boat.
Mm. And you do say that you play the game, you know, with this extreme humanity, but, you know, it looked to us, and I'm sure it was true, that you took the vote out, you know, with so much grace and so much class, but in being voted out and then going to Ponderosa, was there an extreme sense of betrayal from someone like a Rob, or did you then kind of look at it like a game?
You know, no, there was no sense of betrayal whatsoever. There was relief. I was out of the game. I was in so much pain. So, you know, there was a bit of, oh my God, I can put my feet up? Really? Mm-hmm. And I don't have to worry about it like it's done? There was a huge sense of that, okay? So there was no moment of regret. At no point was I... At no point did I regret. Instead, when I walked away, there was a sense of maybe it's the right thing. Maybe I did with this much of humanity and trying to bring people. I mean, you know, I built everywhere I was going, I was building a family. Think about it. Everywhere I was going out, you know, with Laomé, we were a family. We were, you know, it was eliminate the guys that didn't seem like they were part of this family unit and going forward and protect the strong ones and protect the guys that should get to the end at all costs. And I want to be amongst kings and that kind of mindset. I think I was stifling the game. That just the idea of the Spitshaker 7 was stifling the game. And that was a selfish move of saying what Cuevas has brought up works for the people, because both my people are in it. So there's Jacques and there's Rob and myself, and I could, you know what I mean? So for me, it was always about nurturing. So me out of this meant that things might fall apart, you know? And if there's nobody working towards it, because I believe that was my role. And without me, things are going to fall apart. People are going to start stabbing each other because there was no time for that. If you tried to come out and just remotely seem like you were a problem, I was easy to just say, not a camp guy. You know, we go through so much, not here. Here it's a loving space. I mean, let's go to the thing that happened with Jacques, mm-hmm. where he slept on a hammock. That have never happened with me on that island, ever. Let me tell you, it would have, like, it would, like, I can, I swim, like, on my, like, that would, that for me is, it would have never happened. Okay. There's no way something like that happened to anybody, actually, whilst I was there, because that is the only, you know, this survivor is hard on his own. And we cannot be that horrible. We cannot be that malicious. We cannot, you know, there's still life after this game is what I used to, you know, was in my head. You've got to play with some sort of honor. You know, if I was with this thing of if my kids are watching back home, they've got to be able to be proud of me. This here is a showcase of every lesson I've tried to teach them. You know, this is here is how I would want the rest of the world to be. This is that, you know, there's so much I watch this and I'm like, this, if you really want to know me, Survivor really brought out a lot of me. Even in edit, let me tell you, even in edit, there's so much of me in this Survivor that you get to actually meet a bit of me, you know, because at all costs, I was literally just wanting peace at camp, wanting a happy place. I was cooking at all times. There was always hot water for people to drink. There was always food for everybody. There was just, I was working hard at that. The only thing I knew, a home has to have something warm. A home has to be happy. A home has, you know, we, you know, just share. We've got to, if I have an extra dry something, give it to some. If you look, everybody at some point is wearing my clothing. It was just about, let's not win by bringing another one down. You know, so that whole thing that happened with Jacques, for me, is exactly the example that you remove a me, people can be so mean. And I mean, that's why I'm so, people say I'm serious and bitter at tribal council. I was never serious and bitter. I was always serious and serious all the time at all tribal councils. I mean, I've only but not gone to maybe two tribal councils. I've been at every, I was a tribal council from day one. And what I learned is that you must listen at tribal council. There's a lot that Nico says that helps you within the tribal council, that makes you understand people, what they are thinking, even though we all talking hogwash because we don't want to let onto our game. There's a bit of truth that comes out, especially when you listen to someone like Jarrell or Steffi, or, you know, there's always something that comes out that makes you go back and you think, okay, so that was said. What did Mikey mean there when he said that? Because Mikey's very elaborate and he speaks, you know, his mind, and you just kind of thinking. So for me, it was just, I walked away and my jury hat was on. I took that seriously. I took the fact that it's jury time. I must go and listen, because I don't want to end up tomorrow having had done a vote that I could be, that I was persuaded to do, you know, or I wasn't attentive enough to have missed something. And I think things started falling apart and people started literally being daggers out. So maybe it's a good thing that I came out. I actually started thinking that way. It's a good thing that I came out, because then it allows us to really see, you know, Rob, you were always going to be at the end. How are you going to get to the end? Jacques, you are being, you know, asked because, you know, maybe you need to grow a little bit and stand and be strong, and me not protecting, you know. And you know, Kwabi, what are you? You need to at some point get into the game. You know, you can't be on the fence forever. So things need to start playing. Steffi, just your social skills and people skills and not being so competitive about everything. How's that going to roll out? And what's that going to do for you? Nicole, scheming, lying, being in everybody's pocket. Ponderosa, and getting to understand that I was right, that something is brewing there. What is it going to look like? Because I felt like I was stifling the game. So my graciousness of leaving, literally, it was game is done. You know, I'm out. I didn't see it as a betrayal at all. I actually didn't even know that. Didn't even think that Rob was in on it. I don't even know what I was thinking. I just was, it's time for me. Somebody's got to go, guys. So it was my time to go. That's fine. I've come this far. I'm so grateful. I am in so much pain. There's so much relief. It was weird. It was weird. My time there had been amazing. I had gotten the lessons personally that I had wanted to learn. I have met myself. I was glad with the person I was walking away being. There was just a sense of everything that I can't explain to you. And I keep saying, when people, I say to people, you know, if there was a prize to pay to get onto Survivor, I would urge people to pay it, because you have no idea the things that it does for you. But I guess somebody else who's really just didn't go there to experience what I did and is going in to play a pure game would think I'm talking nonsense, because this is a game. But you see, for me, it was so real. Where in a million years will I be thrown in an island with tropical storms, nobody coming to my rescue? I'm ill. I'm sore. I am fighting for my life in the form of, games and puzzles to literally stay alive. And I'm given an opportunity to know 21 people, if even, understand how people view you, or how you can impact people. A bit of humanity, a bit of love makes a difference. A bit of, how do you get in? You know, those, all of those things just played for me. And it was time for me to put my feet up and soak it all in and just recap. And like I say, if I were to go back and play the game, I'd be going in to play that game. There's a difference. The Sibay that everybody met, I think that would, if that's what people would be looking to still see, it wouldn't be there, because I would now be able to say, okay, there's rules and regulations to this thing. My goal is one, and it is to conquer. And I will reach to the end by doing what I need to, if it means annoying people and even walking naked to just literally run them crazy. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't really, at this point, this wasn't the game. You get what I'm saying? So no, I was totally grateful. My time was done. My personal experiences, I had really arrived at a place where what I had gone to this island and put myself through and made my kids proud and everything humane that works in my life, I'd achieved.
But, you know, it did get pretty dark after you left, and you're hearing about what's happening to Jacques and stuff as someone like Margot comes out, and then Steffi comes out. And what we did see at Ponderosa was that you did kind of, you know, stick up for Jacques there and have that confrontation with her, which, you know, that's something, you know, you defending the humanity of the game. And was that a difficult thing to do? Because it was quite a tense moment that we watched.
I kept quiet for so long. You know, again, when you watch these things, they're like a good 10 minutes of Ponderosa. But they go on for like 3 hours, you know, of us trying to understand what's in the game, and you get grilled and you get asked. I was quiet, you know, like literally dead quiet, because I knew what was going to come out of my mouth was not going to be well, you know. And I had been sitting at tribal council night after night and being disappointed night after night that the game is becoming so dark. The game that I was in, again, was changing so fast, because it was starting to not look like the island I was on and the people that I had met, you know. Whenever people started speaking, I'd be like, no, you did not. Like, not. Like, what? You know, I was just in so much disbelief of the things that were happening in the island. I started not to recognize what it was that I had been part of. And that was what I'd been part of was fading away. So Steffi coming, sure, it was a tough one, because one, you need to understand my love for Steffi. Every time I speak, I think you must hear this kumbayaness of how I love everybody. There's just mm-hmm. a sense of something that I love in them. But it's, you know, Steffi is young. I was with a very young cast, and a very young cast that as well is still finding themselves and just individually. And at some point, because I was this mama bear, I got to meet their souls, because in this hardness of this game, I became, at any given time, I don't care who it is, somebody opened up to me to have a real conversation. you know, at some point somebody did. And I'd met glimpses of them. Steffi is a God-loving woman. She is really just an amazing soul and a beautiful human being who is not trusting of the world itself and the people around it. Of her, or maybe, I don't know. It's just, we don't, our backgrounds are different. It's environmental maybe. And I'm a big believer on that saying that says environment everything, heredity nothing. So maybe her environments or whatever, but she doesn't trust easy. She doesn't, you know, but she wants to love people. She really is an amazing God-fearing woman. She really, and to have seen the game do the things that it did to her was hard. And to have seen her having to want the, you see, I call it want the million, at all costs to forget everything that is in the Bible that you believe in, was hard for me to watch. And for her to also be so entitled, because that's how it came across, sitting at the jury, and she was so entitled to be fed, entitled for you must tell us because I'm law of, you know, how many idols you've got. And to see the game do that to people, and to be this is exactly what I didn't want. This is what that conversation with Rob was, you know, and this is why I'm so envious at Rocco when he knew he must leave before he becomes that guy. But again, that's the human game, that like the humanity in me about the kind of game I walked into. However, I now understand that the game itself is brutal. So we started the game completely wrong. I mean, we needed to have walked onto the island completely different, did completely different things, and not did this whole family, kumbaya, love, peace, and everything from the onset. But because the tone was set, everything seemed so wrong. Even Nicole being a snake seemed so wrong, because you can't just one day change from this love family mentality to being this horrible snake that is just biting everybody. So by the time Steffi got there, I was just at a place that I'm thinking, who is this person? And you can't say you are who you are. And I was still at who you say you are and what I've seen are two different things. Who does that? And I lost it, because you just don't treat people like that. I don't care what it means. You just don't treat people like that. Do you understand that you've got children that are watching this game? At what cost are we saying that they must watch the game? What are you teaching people? What are you? So for me, I was carrying that, and I was really upset, because that you just don't do that. And especially when you're Steffi, when you have a heart that I think you have. And we made peace very well with Steffi. She got to understand and say to me, you know, the game is so dark, and she beat herself up so much that she shouldn't actually having to understand, you know, what she was going through in her head. That's one person who's very remorseful around certain things that happened in the game. I also am not so proud of how that was edited and thrown in there. It wasn't me taking the high moral approach of now you have to face me and I'm going to give a lash back at you. No. It was just in trying to say, Steph, I can't understand how anybody, especially you, could get to that place. It still baffles me at this point in time that how badly did you guys want to win? And understanding what Jacques had also gone throughout this entire game. It's a guy who just wanted to meet his wife, you know, on the island. And he was ready to just, at no point Jacques was playing for the million. Let me tell you, you know, Jacques was, the million was going to be a plus. Jacques was playing the best game ever. He was playing the game he loves. He's a true fan. He was just too grateful to be in this. We all knew that. Why take away that? Why kill a dream? Why kill it to a point of making it a sore point? It was all that was playing in my head, that you guys know. I mean, we knew each other's wants and needs. And there was points where we had opened up that I cannot turn the one thing that is so amazing and such a great opportunity for someone to be the one thing that he takes away and he hates the game. I was worried about that for Jacques, because Jacques loves the game of Survivor. He loves it. He's a true fan through and through. And for him to have gone through what he went through in the game that he loves was heartbreaking.
Mm. And, you know, getting to Final Tribal Council, you talk the whole time about how Rob is this king and he's meant to sit at the end. Like, how does your vote end up being for Nicole then?
You know, I got such a lash on that on social media. So, like I said, it was the how. I just believe that kings, if you understand that you are king, it is about how you rule your kingdom. And I'm being honest, it was just the how that he decided that things must fall apart in his watch like that. For me, Nicole had played the game side by side with Rob, and I understood that she had risked her being seen as, you could almost see. I mean, I kept on saying, what is it going to be for this girl at the end of this game? There's no way that even any edit is going to make her look good. You know, and you understand that, and you look and you're like thinking, Nicole is throwing it all away and Rob is letting her. And he is, you know, like it's just the glory is just on one human being, but it's taken a village to do this thing. But nobody else is taking the responsibility of the ugliness here. And it's only sitting on one individual. And at this point in time, it's so ugly that they're both responsible of where it's gone. Rob was always going to have that seat, regardless. In my mind, that seat was always yours, Papa. It was always yours to have. It was just the how you do it, in what kind of manner, the honor it does, you know, to sit there. And for me, it was just to say, okay, I know he's going to win this thing. I was never in doubt of that. I knew, look, I was on the juror. I knew that every single person there was voting for him. I was actually surprised that some votes went to Nicole. You know, mm-hmm. I actually knew that Maba is going to Jarrell, funny enough. As she opened her mouth, I was like, okay, fine. So some Jarrell, somebody's taking care of Jarrell. We all can't see Jarrell's game. Maba is speaking on his behalf. So that's obvious, right? Mm-hmm. So one vote done. What's Jarrell? So Rob is winning this thing. Fair. We all know that. I mean, anything else is criminal. Mm-hmm. Okay. We know that. But there is no way that at this point in time that this entire jury hates Nicole. Like literally, let me tell you, hates Nicole. That I'm sitting here and I'm listening to this and you're going to actually have this girl leave this game like a zero. She left her blood, sweat, bled in this game for Rob. You know, she's bruised for him. So I know at no point that nobody's voting for her. And I know that everybody is, but nobody's seeing her game. Nobody's seeing her struggles. Nobody understands that Nicole was up there par with and had to fight 10 times harder to be sitting on that chair with Rob, even harder than I did. You need to understand that she comes from the bottom at some point to literally get there, you know? And I was like, if this is a game and if you've played it this hard, you deserve a vote or two to literally walk out of here and hold your head high, because I'm not too sure if even Edit is going to be able to edit this for you. Mm-hmm. But I see you. I see the game you've played. I see what you've contributed to this king of mine that's going to win. And for that, thank you. That's what that was.
And then coming back and, you know, watching you back with your son and your kids who made you apply for the show or applied for you, you know, what is that experience like?
My son would have voted me out, I think.
What's your son's name? We're going to get him on Survivor.
Khosi would have voted me out, I think, somewhere on third or something.
He's going to win Survivor one day. I can see it.
He was like, you're stifling the game. You're stifling the game. You went there. Why? He says, why is Nathan on your lap? Why do you feel like Nathan should be you? Mom, Nathan is not your, there's no child of yours in this thing. Everybody there is an equal. They all understand. why they're at the game. They're all there to play a game. They didn't need a mother. Oh my God, I can't believe this cost. Oh my goodness, I can't. I want to throw up, Mom. Every single time. I mean, you open your mouth and I'm just thinking, kumbaya, la la la. Nobody needs a mom. That's how he was. He was harsh. He was like, no. I swear it was hard watching this game with him. He just could not understand anybody. He was like, but I'm telling you, he celebrated. When I left, he says, let the games begin.
Who did he want to win?
I'm telling you, when I left, he wanted Rob to win. He believes Rob. It was nobody. It was not a question. He wanted Rob to win, honestly speaking, from day one. He liked Steffi a lot. He thinks that Steffi should have been second to Rob and maybe she would have given him a run for his money. But that it was in that order. Rob, Steffi, and what else did he like? I think it was Jacques in his nerdy ways, but he says I contaminated Jacques for him because I became mom to Jacques again.
Oh my God.
So you contaminated so that. Yeah, no, he is truly hard. So I would have left by vote 3 or so. He thinks that, yeah, I should have, no, that it, no, no, no. You went there and you did the opposite of what I wanted for you. He wanted for me to go and breathe and play a game and not be responsible for any other soul. And I got there and I was responsible for over 10 souls and building them up and doing the thing that I do. And you do this all the time. When is it going to be your time? Just throw somebody under the bus already. You know, you had so many opportunities to just throw everybody under the bus. And I'm like, but I'm not that person. And he still says, you need to go back and just undo you. Mm-hmm. That's what my son believes. Just undo it. Let's see what happens if you do that. Because I live life like that. I live a life that just says, treat people the way you want to be treated. And he says, but not in a game scenario, you know? So the one thing he wanted for me was just the one thing I became on the game. And he just feels like, no, no, no. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So that's what he thinks.
What about getting to the reunion and seeing that Nicole gets 4 votes? You were throwing her a vote just in case she wasn't going to get any. Did that make you happy that she was getting credit? Or knowing the game that Rob played, did you think he actually deserved a little more credit than that?
Look, I mean, I'm glad that people saw her game, that I wasn't being really just an emotional about my vote and too critical on that vote, to actually see that everybody, there's some people who actually did resonate with the fact that, look, she played a game with you. And if you look for me, Jacques voting for Nicole says a lot. And Nicole, honestly, if she doesn't see it for what it is, that's a true player. That's somebody who has a full respect for the game. If he's voted for you, that means you really played somewhat, okay? Mm. And you deserve this vote. For me, it was seeing that as well, the same thing. So again, one person that I really would take the opinion on the game very seriously is Jacques. So if he's voted for you, great. Kobe, like I said, he was always friends with Nicole, even on the island. So I'm not sure how that was that based on their friendship. Mm-hmm. I'm not too sure. So we never did discuss our votes because we weren't allowed to. So we never did even get to the point where, why did you vote for, you know, A and B? So I don't even know what was behind the votes, but I'm glad that she got a few votes too. I'm very glad. I'm glad that she was redeemed in the game and given a second run that is a real solid second run rather than just being one person. And at that point, I just thought, I'm that person. To have gotten Steffi to come around and vote for you and see you for the game, I hope she sees that as a real olive leaf branch towards that, to say, I see you and we played an ugly game together, but I, you know, there's a lot of, I think personally, making up and mending with those relationships, that's a really great space for Steffi to have done that. But I can only assume that's what it was, or she really saw her game for real and did that. So, was I worried? for Rob when I started seeing it was a close shave. I mean, mm-hmm. and that's the first thing. Funny enough, it was a close shave, and I was like, oh my goodness, dear Lord, how close.
Right? Yeah, imagine if he lost and you had thrown a vote to Nicole just so she didn't get zero votes, and then he won the game.
I would have, now we are, now, yeah, no, I can't think like that. That was never happening. See, I can't even wrap my head around something that like that.
I don't
no.
think it was either. Like, so, I do think so, yeah, that is like, I mean, locked in, but in a different world.
Yeah, so, and funny enough, he's the one person that understands why. You know, when the rest of the world wants to come down on me about why did you vote for Nicole? And people are saying it's because I'm bitter. No, I was never bitter. There was never bitterness in this game. You were bitter. And no, the one person, when he came to hug me after that, he said, oh my God, that was close, wasn't it? And I was like, oh my God, yeah. He says, were you holding thumbs after what you did? I'm like, yep, I was holding thumbs after mm-hmm. what I did. You know, and we talked about it, and he hugged me so much. And he's, you know, that you have no idea how much love this boy has. And he loves me for that. He was like, I love you. And you've always been that mother figure. I understand it. And he hugged me for dear life, and I hugged him back. And I've got no regrets. And I would most probably do it exactly the same, because for me, it's for him to always understand as well. That because he understood that it was always about the same goal he had of the Amigos, but the integrity of it as well, the how we get to the end, the having to arrive at the end with some sort of dignity and respect, and having it taken care of every character and individual and space. But like I say, that's not the root of the game. And coming from me, it then comes, you know, I was never in there with the rules of the game to play the game. I went in there I was very human in that, a lot actually. Yeah.
Mm. Well, we've gotten to most of the listener questions. I do have one here that I think would be a good one. Kylie Wilson asks, what would you say is your proudest moment in the game?
The proudest moment in the game is having to have, you know, played it. Proudest moment, I'm just kind of thinking, is being part of these great individuals. Rob and Jacques, is being, having had been a very big part of the social game and setting out a path that I can sit here and be proud of just the individual and the influence that I have and what I was able to do on the island, because you can see my game. You can almost see, well, rather my presence in the game. And that for me is important. You know, I never want to be in any space and be forgotten or not even be seen. My fight in this entire game, I fought from day one. Day one, I literally started breathing at day six, and that was taken away from me. So the fight in me, to be able to meet myself and be given the opportunity to watch myself and to learn from certain things that I seen on the show and recollection that may have not made the show, and be able to say, you know, I was being truthful there and being myself, and there's certain things that I could take away, and to also see that love goes a long way. It has no color. It has no language. It has no, it matters not. If you're thrown in an island and one human being is very humane and brings love with them. I had Letitia call me Ma, guys. She's 56. I had boys and all sorts of creed and color and base and places gravitate to me. As love, you know, Ma wasn't necessarily what I was going for, but it just means as love, because that's what I was about in all my hardness or what it may seem as. The basis of it was just love and fairness and wanting everybody to have some sense of comfort. And I love that about me, and I'm happy to watch it back and see that.
Yeah, well, I totally agree, even if your son does not. I'm so glad that you came on the podcast to share, you know, more insights into your game. What is the hashtag for people who made it this far? How do you spell your son's name? Because I want to do Cozzy for Survivor. That's what I want to do as a hashtag.
My son's name is Pussy, K-G-O, K-G-O-S-I.
Yes.
K-G-O-S-I.
K-G-O-S-I. Okay. Cosby for Survivor. I think that's what we, that's the hashtag.
Yeah. So you, yeah, you can just do maybe Cosby Mash so that it resonates that it's him. That's Mash for his surname, which is too long, but Cosby Mash.
Cosby Mash for Survivor. I agree. I think one day he is going to win Survivor. I just, everything you said, he's got really good insights. He's sneakily applied for you to be on the show. Like, he's playing the game before he's even on the island. That's someone who's going to win Survivor.
I would have loved for that human being to come through for a family visit as well. Yeah. That would have been a dream of his.
That would have been good.
And we were almost there. We were all there. Yeah, we were almost there. But yes, that's pussy for you.
Yeah. Well, Sipe, where can people find you on social media to follow everything that you're doing?
So on Twitter, I'm at Sipei Biker Queen. That's Sipei Biker Queen. One word. On Instagram, I'm Sipei Biker Queen SA. And then on Facebook, I'm Sipei Mashuhani, or Sipe is actually without the I. So Sipe Mashuhani. And then, or you just literally, if you go into Google and you Google Biker Queen, you're bound to find my handles one way or the other.
I love that that's your title, you know, Biker Queen. That's the best lower third I've seen ever.
Yeah, so there's a lot of riding that I do, a lot of charity that comes with riding. It's another big fraternity that have molded the way that I think, or rather I am. It's a big male-dominated fraternity with love, brotherhood, where you do unto others as you would like them to do unto you. We give a lot. We do a lot of things. And I've just been blessed to be part of that fraternity. And so it's just resonating to be the queen of the bikers in that manner, and they call me Biker Queen, is also something that I cherish a lot.
Yeah, well, I love it. I love having you on the podcast. You guys can all follow me at Shannon Gates and subscribe to the International Survivor Hap-Ups feed if you haven't already. Tell your friends about all the great postseason coverage that we have for Survivor South Africa, that we already have Jock's Deep Divers out, Mike, Nicole, Rob, now Sipe. We have Jeff to come. And then in a little over a week, we have Lura Buta coming onto the show. He is the executive producer of the series director. He has a very important title. He's like running the show on Survivor South Africa. So that'll be an absolute treat for anyone who loves the show. And we're probably going to get Nico on at a point. So a really good lineup happening. Australian Survivor coverage is keeping on. Pia, Janine, and Luke are already out. Baden is recorded and coming out soon. So that'll be all of my deep dives for that. And I'm also covering US Survivor this weekend on The Voicemails with Rob Cisternino. So getting it all done. I hope you guys will subscribe and follow me for all of that. But thank you so much again, Sipe, for coming on and sharing so much of your Survivor story.
Thank you so much for having me, Shannon. Thank you so much. It was actually really great to just talk it all out.
Yeah, that's what we're here to do. I hope it's cathartic, gets it all out of everyone's system. Everyone stops tossing and turning at night about Survivor and kind of like closes the journey. That's what I hope we're providing here.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you so much again, Sipe, for your time. Thanks to Scott St. Pierre behind the scenes. Thanks to all of you for listening. Please subscribe, follow me for all of the content that is still coming to you. And I will see you on the next deep dive. Bye.